Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
As more and more time goes by, NBA players are expressing some doubts about going to Orlando and living on that cruise ship without the cruise or the water. As an example, Washington's Thomas Bryant had this to say.
Me personally, I don't like people telling me what I can and cannot do, but I also follow rules as well.
All right, so he is officially going. However, there's differences from team to team, teammate to teammate. As an example, his teammate, Bradley Beal, is still on the fence.
I have yet to make mine. I'm still working my tail off every single day, as if I am playing. Definitely, it's more or less going to be a decision that comes down to the medical staff and I, just because of our precautions and just coming back from being 0 to 100. You know, and then I had some nagging stuff at the end of the year we're trying to clean up too. So we're looking at it from all angles, but I'm definitely working out every single day here. It's good to be back in the facility, but I'm not swayed one way or another.
All right, so that's Bradley Beal. Then you've got the fact that he expects the games to be sort of ugly, that they're not going to be good.
Okay, so now you're saying we only have 2 weeks to really fully get in basketball shape, you know, and until we have to be balls out.
Might be more like 3 weeks to get into basketball shape before you have to go balls out to make a playoff push, but I do see Beal working. So you've got concerns about the quality of basketball. You have concerns about the chance of getting injured because of a quick restart. You've got concerns about life in the bubble, and you have concerns about the rules of the bubble itself. And then there are the concerns that the rules of the bubble are going to be ignored. Like Damian Lillard thinks there's a really strong chance of that happening.
Confidence ain't great. My confidence ain't great because you telling me you're going to have, you know, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules, like 100% freedom. Everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position. You know what I'm saying?
All right, so the man's got a point, right? A very good point. Is every single player and every single staffer from every single team going to honor every single rule of that 113-page COVID rulebook for the entire time they're there? Doubt that. So I've got about as much confidence in that as Dame does. And that's not based on anything other than watching how the rest of the country has responded to the virus. I mean, you've got people freaking out in supermarkets when they're asked to wear a mask for 20 or 30 minutes. But now you're going to ask more than 700 people to go weeks without seeing their families. Here's another one. Players and staffers are not allowed to socialize in each other's rooms. So when you see yet another video of some dope at a Costco or a Pier 1 losing it because they're asked to put on a mask, you're going to tell me that every single player and every single staffer is going to follow every single rule. That's before we even get to the bigger issues like breaking the bubble and going off campus, because there's probably a pretty good chance that that's going to happen as well. And that'll be happening in a state where cases are skyrocketing, which raises questions about how safe that NBA bubble really is. Lillard thinks that being on the inside of the bubble is safer than being on the outside, but there's still no way to make it perfect.
The fact that we're going to be in a bubble, I think that kind of knocks it down. It limits the chance of us being exposed to, you know, everybody else outside of the bubble in Orlando, you know, which is causing the numbers to rise there. So I think it is a safer situation, but I also don't feel like it's possible for them to protect us 100%. And I think everybody's going there understanding that.
Right. It's not 100%. Lillard also said that he's got a plan for how he's going to handle his business. See, that's the thing. If you have any shot for this thing to work, you better have a plan. And he does. He said, quote, "I know there's going to be activities for us and all that stuff, but I mean, I'm going to be chilling. I feel like there's still a possibility for something to spread within that bubble, just with so many people doing so many different things that we've got to follow to be safe, even though we're not exposed to the public. So for me, it's going to be, what time is practice? What time can I get in the weight room? What time can I get some shots up? And what's the plan for game day?" End quote. So when he's not at practice or in the weight room or at shoot around, he's going to be in one place only. He said, quote, then I'm going to be in my room. I'm going to have my PS3, my PS4. I'm going to have my studio equipment, my mic, my laptop. I'm going to have all my books. That's it, man. I'm going to be in the room chilling, end quote. For that thing to work, they're all going to have that approach. Because that right there is a great strategy and a great approach. That's next level. Like, bring your studio equipment, bring your mic, bring your laptop, do some work, record a few tracks, maybe even an entire album or a box set, because you're going to have time, lots of time. But even then, even if he brings his PS4 and all his studio equipment and all of his other equipment, the guy's still going to get bored, right? There's no way you can't. You can't keep doing the same thing day in and day out and sitting in a hotel room, no matter how nice that room is, and not get bored. And that's with a guy who's got a plan. That's a guy who's got great discipline. That's a guy with an elite mindset. What about all the other guys that don't prepare for that? What about the players and staffers who don't bring all their books and their studio equipment? And they think, I'll be fine. I'll just play golf and I'll play ping pong. If they don't have a plan, they're going to get bored or go stir crazy or both. So I definitely get why Lillard's confidence is not great that everybody is going to follow all the rules. If players and staffers are breaking the rules when there aren't many rules, how the hell are they going to follow all of the rules when there's 113 pages of rules? Right? So like Lillard, my confidence ain't great. Ain't great that they'll follow all the rules. Ain't great that the basketball will be great. And isn't this all just great? Ain't life great? It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. That is the bubble life. And they're about to go in. Johnny Hecker is my guest. Johnny, it's great to have you on. Before we get into everything, Johnny, how are you and everybody around you doing right now?
Jim, we're doing great. Yeah, we're up in here in Seattle, kind of holed up at home still, waiting to get the family moved back down to L.A. Before things start back up for us. But yeah, we're all safe and sound. And man, just a quick shout out to my agent, Paul. He is currently battling COVID right now. So just let everybody know that he's in our thoughts and prayers. And me, love him and pulling for him.
Absolutely. I appreciate you saying that. So Johnny, what's it like during the quarantine? I mean, there's so many things going on, but you have a two-year-old as well. What's it like having a two-year-old during quarantine and going through that with them?
It is a blessing and a curse, absolutely, because it is, no 2 days look the same. And, he's always keeping things moving. You know, you're not sitting around too much. He's always trying to wrestle or do something, change up the activity that he's doing. So it definitely keeps the pace of the day going and kind of has everything a bit of a whirlwind around here. But it's been fun, and having this quality time with him has been really precious and something I'm going to remember for a long time. And one of the big takeaways from this thing that's been a blessing in my life and my wife's as well. She's pregnant, so having the extra set of hands around when I would have been at OTAs and everything has been great for both of us.
It's good to hear. Johnny Hecker is joining us. It's like the new normal is that nothing is normal. So you've been around the league for a while. What's the offseason been like? For instance, like what would you do normally during the offseason, and what have you done this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, for me, not a ton changes just because I'm usually on the field by myself punting. As far as getting my position specific work done, and then working out kind of just been a lot more in my garage than at the facility with the guys. But that's probably the one thing that I miss the most is that camaraderie and being in the weight room and getting those conditioning sessions in with everybody else around you, and doing it by yourself is a little tough. But you know, it's also been great to have that quality family time and be able to kind of just lay low and kind of be able to pick and choose your own schedule, but just kind of drive your own progression as the off season goes. But yeah, for the most part, just been working on my garage. I got a little squat rack and some weights, throw them around when I can, use exercise bands, go try and jump a fence, get my punts in before I get kicked off of a field up here in Seattle. And man, just do what I can to keep my skills sharp and stay ready for when we do get the call back orders.
All right, so listen up for a minute. Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to make sure that what you're listening to is what you're listening to and not what your neighbor or children or a significant other is listening to. You feel me? Everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But before you go dropping hundreds on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. They're amazing. Now, you already know that Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market, but they sound just as amazing as the other top brands that you know of, and they've got a new model. Their newest model is the Everyday E25 earbuds. They're the best ones to date. 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design, which gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. And to me, that's everything. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, they're perfect for conference calls or binging podcasts like this. And unlike some other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, no dangling wires or stems to distract anybody during video calls. Get the latest and greatest from Raycon and get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/Rome. Buyraycon.com/ROME for 15% off. Raycon wireless earbuds by Raycon.com/Rome. We're talking to Rams punter Johnny Hecker. Johnny, a few weeks back, I thought you had a really powerful statement on Instagram in the wake of the killing of George Floyd and conversations you had with your teammates. What were those conversations like, and what did you take away from them?
Yeah, the conversations were great. You know, it was just kind of led by Coach McVay and kind of the leadership of some of our other people of color in our organization, and they just kind of made an open forum for us to be able to talk and express our feelings and just have open and honest communication about what we're feeling, what's going on in our country, and how we can be better and how we can listen to each other. It was a moment just for me to sit there and listen. No, I didn't want to try and listen with the intentions of having a rebuttal or having a you know, that's the way I feel as well. It was just listening to kind of take it all in and listening to the stories that a lot of my teammates and some of our coaches and support staff have had of, you know, of targeted racism or, you know, ways that they've been treated unfairly because of the color of their skin solely as the sole motivation behind the injustice, which is, you know, it's tough. And, you know, I grew up in suburban Seattle, went to Oregon State, not the two biggest hotbeds of, you know, ethnic diversity. So football has been a great tool for me to experience that, you know, different cultures and be around Black people and realize that, you know, my childhood and my upbringing is vastly different and a totally different reality than from what they're facing on a day-to-day basis. So just to have those conversations and to realize that, man, racism is not dead. It's just a little subversive these days and that, man, people are still really facing an uphill battle just because of the color of their skin in our country. And we got to do better as white people or as people of influence, and just letting people know that it's not okay to do those things. And, man, just find a way to, you know, lift people up out of situations where they are being looked down on.
Very well said. Johnny Hecker is joining us. And Johnny, earlier in the offseason, you were named to the 2010s All-Decade team. It's a tremendous honor. What's that honor mean to you?
I mean, it's cool. It's nothing that I really am going to hang my hat on at the end of the day. It's a great honor to have. There've been a lot of great punting performances through the 2010s. I'm just trying to use it as a springboard into the 2020s, you know, hopefully can extend my career a good few years into this 2020 decade, but it's a deal where I'm, you know, really thankful for the guys that I had around me during the 2010s. I had great coaching, great players around me that really sacrificed a lot for me to be productive. So, that's definitely what I think of when I look back at that award or that accomplishment is all the guys that were around me that bought into our special teams philosophy. You know, I'm not punting every ball perfect out of bounds, 50 yards every time. There's a lot of plays where guys are saving me, making big tackles, downing balls, inside the 20. And, man, I really owe it to those guys. So as soon as I got that recognition, I sent out a bunch of texts and let guys know that I appreciated them and, man, kind of gave them part of that shine too, because I think that's really deserved.
And I know that for a fact they appreciate you as well. As an example, Aaron Donald was also named to the All-Decade team. A few years back, though, long snapper Jake McQuaid said, quote, "If we have a good punt and we pin them down inside the five, watch Aaron Donald, who's maybe the best player in the NFL. Watch him come off the sideline the way he celebrates with Johnny. And Aaron Donald knows that football, he appreciates what Johnny does. If you think you're a football guy and you don't understand that, that's important. You're going to have to reassess." Like, I love that quote. What are those moments like for you when you can pose or pin the opposing team deep and you know that Donald and the rest of the defense can just go to work?
It's a huge source of, you know, energy. It's an energy boost. You know, it's a game of momentum, and if you can have those those moments where either you flip the field or pin an opponent deep, just that momentum change is, you know, you can feel it, you know, and the energy you've got coming off the sideline, the defense coming off the sideline, you know, or a big return when the offense comes back on the sideline. We try and really provide a shot of juice into the game. And when you can do that, pin a guy, pin somebody deep, knowing our D-line, knowing our defensive secondary, you know, they're going to give the quarterback fits and he's going to be seeing a lot of different stuff. So he's got to get rid of the ball fast because of who's coming at him. But, man, it's a great situation to know that you're appreciated first off coming off the field, but then, you know, I get the bucket of popcorn out and watch AD do work.
Rams punter Johnny Hecker, my guest. Now, I mentioned off the top, Johnny, you've thrown 22 passes in your career. You've also called off a few others. Like, what's going through your head when you're lining up and the play calls for you to pass? Are you super relaxed in that moment or are you fired up?
I try and be as relaxed as possible for sure. It's just going back to the you know, hundreds of reps that we've had at practice or the reps that I've thrown after practice to receivers or when they're done with offensive drills and we got scout team O out there, I'll throw some balls to them. But, man, it's just the more hyped up and amped I am, probably the more it'll show to the punt return team or the easier it'll be for me to sky ball over someone's head or skip it to them. So I try and just stay as relaxed as possible, keep breathing, and try and make everything look the same so that way I'm not tipping anybody off. But my heart rate is definitely elevated.
All right, so I had actor Scott Eastwood on the show yesterday. We were talking about a couple of years back when he and Kevin Hart went to Rams camp. He was trying to catch punts from the machine. Instead, it's so much tougher than people would ever imagine. Like, what's your reaction when you hear regular people say, oh, I could catch a punt in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between being on a field and then catching one off the jugs versus in a game, you know, when you have guys that are running 4.3 40s bearing down on you and, you know, everyone's trying to rip your head off. But it's a deal where it's a very underappreciated skill, I think. You get people that are even athletes that have played to a certain level and you catch a football off a guy's foot. Off of jugs, you know, you're going to get pretty much the same rotation every time. The ball's going to come down in relatively the same area. But in a football game, you got punters that are misdirecting you, leaning one way and hitting the ball the other way or hitting balls that curve one way or another. There's a lot of deception in the punting game. And, man, the good returners make it look easy.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you brought that up and explained it like that because I was going to say, it's not like you just stand back there and just smoke the same punt over and over again. You've got a variety of punts in your arsenal. How many variations do you have and how do you go about deciding which punt to go with in a given moment?
Variations. I would say I have probably just like three regular styles of punts that I hit. You know, I hit an end over end going in ball. I hit a spiral in the open field. And then I can hit a ball that kind of curves sideways from left to right, call that a banana. And then I have the variations that you have off of those are the way that you lean. You can drop it inside and hit it, like look like you're going to hit it right, pull it left, look like you're going to hit it left, pull it right, and just kind of the different leg angles that you have on each one of those hits. But, it just going back to practice and the situations that I've put myself in during the week is kind of where I build that confidence for game day and also just going into warmups and seeing the field conditions and which, you know, if the wind's blowing at my back, maybe I can hit a going in ball from the minus 40 instead of the plus 40. So you really just kind of got to play the conditions that day, but also just realizing that, you know, if you have the freedom to be able to hit whatever kind of punt you want, you're just going to do whatever you can to give your team the best outcome.
Rams punter Johnny Hecker is joining us. We're talking philosophy. You know, I've had a number of kickers on the show. Johnny, in recent years, we always talk about the mindset required to be a kicker. How would you describe the mindset and the mental approach required to be a punter?
Oh, I haven't given too much thought to this, which might be a point to kind of the mindlessness involved. You know, you need to be present in the moment, but the more you think about what you're doing, the harder it's going to be to replicate. You know, you need to kind of just be in a kind of in the zone kind of mentality. But for the most part, it's everyone makes this correlation, but it's like golf. You know, you're doing a similar swing over and over. You need to be consistent, and then you also need to have a kind of a great short-term memory amnesia. You know, you hit a ball, and if it was good, you can't carry that into your next ball thinking, oh, this next one's going to be great because of that last one. Or if it's bad, you can't think this next one's going to be bad because of the last one. You know, you have to put that one behind you and really treat each rep as a unique circumstance because the field position changes, you know, the time in the game, the momentum and everything. You need to just have all of that in mind, but at the same time, you want to go out there and be as just mindless as possible and just let your technique take over and let muscle memory kind of get you through the rep.
Johnny Hecker, my guest. I think that's well said as well. I like the analogy about golf and the golf swing. So let me ask you this. You had that punt against Kansas City in that shootout where you blasted that one with over a minute left. The sound of your foot on the ball was one thing, but then there was the reaction from the crowd. What's it feel like when you get that perfect connection with the ball and the crowd has that kind of a reaction? And do you feel it?
Yeah. I mean, it's something where I don't really notice it until maybe I watch the TV copy or something, but when you hit one good and, you know, I don't really watch the ball come off my foot. I have kind of my head down as I follow through and I look up and, man, there've been plenty of times where I thought I absolutely smashed the ball and it comes out like a duck or where you don't feel like you hit it good and it turns out okay. But those ones where you just absolutely smash it, it's undeniable. It's like you barely even swung through the thing and almost didn't even hit the ball, but it just flies off your foot and you see it soaring through the air. There's no better feeling to a punter, I feel.
He is a six-time All-Pro, a four-time Pro Bowler, a member of the 2010s All-Decade team, and again, 13 for 22 and a touchdown throwing the football. Johnny Hecker with that jungle debut. Johnny, great to have you on. That was really interesting. Great to talk to you. Hope we can do it again soon.
Yeah, Jim. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And let's go Rams.
Let's talk porn. Let's talk NBA porn. There are lots of things to be concerned about as it relates to the NBA bubble. I did it at the top of the program. I laid it out. Damian Lillard did a really good job of laying out what his concerns are. So there are lots of things to worry about, such as the fact that the bubble is located in Florida, the home of spiking COVID cases, and the fact that there really is no way to keep that many people truly safe and isolated for months on end. It's not really possible, right? And the fact that some park employees reportedly will be allowed to go in and out without regular testing. So it's not a true bubble. And the list goes on and on and on. And then, of course, one of the unspoken concerns, the thing that most of you seem so concerned about, is the recreational activities. And no, I'm not talking about golf. I'm not talking about ping pong. I'm talking about the undefeated, undisputed, heavyweight champion of all time, sex. Has never lost and never will. Because sex is a factor here. And the factor is this. If you read the league's rules correctly, it sounds like there won't be much sex happening. Because visitors are not allowed until the second round of the playoffs. So that means the players and staffers are going to go weeks without company, i.e. sex. So recognizing this, one enterprising company has already stepped forward with a novel solution, has stepped up to fill the void, to meet the need, to make a difference. Now, let me rephrase all that. A porn site has stepped up with a pub grab, as they always do. And you know the way this goes, right? In a situation like this, you've got a company that comes out with some crazy statement or offer. They draft a press release, and then they carpet bomb every single reporter, blog, and wacky morning zoo show that they can find, acting like it's some kind of serious business proposition. And then those dopes report on it, and then the company gets what it wants. Free pub. Nobody takes them up on the offer, but it still works because it's not about the offer or promotion. It's about the free pub grab, and it works every single time. It's almost as undefeated as sex itself. Think about all the times you've heard of a porn site or a beer company with some wacky promotion like renaming a stadium or offering a free drink if something highly improbable happens or somebody offering $1 billion if you can do this. You know, but these things could never happen. It'd be like two asteroids colliding during the fourth inning of Game 3 of the World Series or claiming that their Super Bowl commercial had been banned because it was too controversial. And then every dumbass where the morning zoo show talks about it and they get their giggle on because it seems edgy and hilarious. But the company was never going to buy the naming rights to a stadium. The company probably never even made a Super Bowl commercial in the first place. They just wanted the free pub. So in the case of the NBA bubble, a certain porn site announced a promotion yesterday for the league. I'm not going to name the company because, you know, they're not about that. I mean, I genuinely believe that they're doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. They don't want the pub. They want to help out. They want to make a difference. They're not looking to make it about them. They're noble porn merchants just looking to solve a problem. That's how thoughtful and selfless this gift is. So Fred Katz from The Athletic tweeted out a screenshot of the PR email that he received from the porn site announcing that they have, quote, extended an offer to all NBA players and coaches who will be in Orlando for this year's upcoming season, end quote. First off, you know how you know it's legit? Because they're referring to the restarted league in a bubble as, quote, this year's upcoming season. All right, so that aside, what about the offer? What exactly is the proposition? Quote, considering the very strict social distancing guidelines that the league laid out, website redacted by me, is offering NBA players and coaches a comped VIP membership to its website to provide reassurance that whenever they're lonely or they need some extra motivation leading up to a big game. All right, so let me just jump in there right there. Pretty fitting that I'm talking about this company 2 days before July 4th. Because, man, they're a damn bunch of patriots, aren't they? What a bunch of heroes. They're not doing it for the pub. They're doing it as a service. This isn't some lame cry or desperate pub grab. This is about reassuring any players and coaches who feel lonely or a staffer who's lacking motivation before a big game. That's true heroism. Man, you love to see that, especially at a time like this. That's stepping up when it matters most. That's reaching out to people who are going through a hard time. So great of a porn site to have the finger on the pulse of the nation to understand just how dire this situation is right now. And to offer to pick up the tab for players or coaches or staffers who might be feeling lonely or who decide that they're not motivated for the big game because of all the fear and dread around them. So what are they going to do? They'll pick up some porn. That'll lift them. That'll motivate them. Isn't that what porn does for all of us? It almost makes me want to throw up my first poll question ever on Twitter. Do you watch porn on your phone or on your laptop? Y'all get right at that. Anyway, my point is, I love it when a business has a social conscience. That's the definition of doing well by doing good. Like over the past few months, we've seen companies step up and offer free masks, free food, free everything to people and communities in need. And now we have free porn for NBAers. Like, everybody's chipping in to play their part. Everybody is looking for a way that they can serve in some way. And that's exactly what the Founding Fathers had in mind when they jotted down the Declaration of Independence nearly 250 years ago this week. I love also their pitch email included the line, quote, "We have yet to hear back from any specific players, but we remain hopeful that someone will want to take advantage of the opportunity here." End of quote. Of course, nobody has. Like, that's the point. They're not actually giving anything away. And if on the off chance that somebody actually took them up on this offer, the porn site would be so hyped because then they could fire off another press release about how heroic they are. The moment somebody actually signs up for this offer, that porn site will stage a parade through the Magic Kingdom to celebrate and then name drop the only player stupid enough to put their name to it. So, thank you, anonymous porn site. Thank you for your heroic and patriotic offer of a comped VIP membership to all of those who are trapped in the NBA bubble. When the history books tell you the story of 2020, they will tell you a tale of heroism and charity. Because when things were bleak, when nearly all hope was lost, they stepped up and they offered free porn. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to see an NBA superstar hold a press conference on Zoom and say, "Hey, yo, is this thing on? Can you guys hear me?" Like, I was not going to join my teammates in the bubble because there was no way in hell I was going to go 3 weeks without getting tail. But now, thanks to anonymous porn sites VIP membership, I'm down. I'm all in. Mercedes Lewis is my guest. Mercedes, it's so good to have you back. Listen, it's been a long time since you and I. What's up? How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I just got finished training.
Good, good. I'm glad to get that work in. Listen, you and I have not talked for a long time, and there are things I want to get to, but what's it been like for you and everybody around you during this really unusual time? Bring me up to date.
Well, I think it's, you know, I'm pretty sure I can speak for a lot of the guys out there, especially in my position and playing ball and not and being unsure whether we're going to have camp. And it's been crazy. Family has gotten tighter, that's for sure. Probably lost a lot of associates.
Right.
But, you know, everybody's been healthy on my side of things. And, you know, I'm praying for the health of everybody else, too.
You bet. Mercedes Lewis, my guest, you mentioned that you just got your work in. I'm curious, what has the offseason been like for you, and how have you gone about approaching it?
The offseason's been pretty good for me. You know, I have a personal trainer, so I'm not with a lot of guys when I am training. I went to Cabo for like almost a month, flew him out there just to relax and get away, trained out there. You know, I'm pretty much in quarantine before it was a thing.
That's a smart move. Now, you're entering your 15th season, which is really impressive in and of itself. How do you explain that? For instance, how much of that is about just God-given talent, and then how much of that is about hard work and mindset and approach?
Well, I think, you know, it's a big misconception as far as talent and skill. You're born with talent. Skill is after you've been beat on your talent for hours and hours and staying committed to the process. And I think that's something that I grasped from a young age. My mom being 15 years old and having me growing up, single mom in the hood of Long Beach. So I got that aspect of hard work real early. And, you know, just the God-given ability, you know, is definitely appreciated, obviously. But, you know, my mental approach to the game, not just on the field, but in the classroom, is just unparalleled. And obviously that's learned. And every year, you know, I'm just trying to trim the fat and get better at what I do, and always keep that edge internally. You know, I'm not external motivated. I'm very internally motivated. So, you know, it hasn't been tough for me to stay, you know, on track and stay in my zone.
See, I was going to say, the thing about that is it's whenever athletes, Mercedes, call it a day, at the end of the line, it's always one of two things goes first, right? Either your pure ability goes, like you want to still do it, but you can't, or your will to prepare and train goes. What keeps you motivated and inspired to put in that kind of work even 15 years in on a daily basis?
You know what? It's one of those things to where, you know, I've been blessed to never call this job that I do work. I've been doing it since I was 7 years old. And they always say, find something that you really love, because when you do, you'd rather be there than anywhere else. And I couldn't imagine, you know, not just letting this opportunity slip. I've always been in the moment, and I stay in that moment. And that's just how it's been. It's, you know, it's a different kind of mindset, like I said. And I've just been blessed to, you know, have come across a few good coaches that, you know, pointed me in the right direction. And always kept me, you know, striving to be my personal best every day.
Packers tight end Mercedes Lewis is my guest. Back in January, you had a post on Instagram which read, quote, "The fear of not playing at a high level, being inconsistent, or letting my teammates down is terrifying," end of quote. I think that's a really powerful statement. Can you talk more about that? How much does that fear drive you every day and that motivation not to let the people down around you that you play with?
Oh, of course. I mean, well, look at it in the grand scheme of things. Football is the ultimate complimentary sport, right? So if I'm out there and I'm not where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there, doing my job but doing it well, Aaron Rodgers could be getting sacked. Aaron Jones could be getting tackled in the backfield. You can't be jumping off sides. No pre-snap penalties. I think it's all about just being disciplined and understanding that, you know, the man next to you, you have to be aware that you're playing for him. And I think that, you know, that's always been my mindset. My stepfather was in the military, Purple Heart. And that's just how it was. That's just how I was raised in the house. You know, and I'm playing for the man next to me. And I'm not playing because I dislike the dude in front of me. I'm playing because I love the guy next to me. So that's just how it's been.
Hey, listen, I'm hearing this, and I can hear it in your voice, what the game means to you, what your dedication to the craft is, that it's more than just a game. Like, you were in Jacksonville for a long time, and then you go to Green Bay. The first year did not necessarily go the way you would have expected. The story goes that after a shutout loss to Detroit at the end of the 18 season, you actually thought about moving on or possibly retiring. Given what the game means to you and the way things went that year, what kind of thoughts and emotions were you having at that point?
Well, I think, you know, obviously after coming off a really good year in 17, my last year in Jacksonville, you know, and ended up going to Green Bay, you know, I figured they had a plan for me. So when I got there, everything seemed cool and sweet during camp. And then, you know, things just went by the wayside. I don't blame anybody for that. I think everything happens for a reason. You know, and 18 came up, and it was like, yo, we just got my offensive coordinator. It was in Jacksonville, understands my capabilities and what I bring to the game. You bring LaFleur in who runs a, you know, running game, play action pass off the running game. That's right in my wheelhouse. So I think the universe works in great ways, man. And, you know, I've always, you know, laid my hat on, you know, if I just go on with my daily life and do things because I know that they're right, with no agenda, good things are going to happen. And it just happened that way.
Mercedes Lewis is joining us. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers. This is what he said about you. Quote, you can't have enough Mercedes Lewis is on your roster. End quote. I know you think highly of him. What's it like to play with him?
He's, first and foremost, you know, I've always been, you know, mentally inclined as far as when it comes to football concepts and understanding the game from a, you know, not a narrow view, right? I understand what's going on the field. This is like the, you know, one of the first times where I felt like when I looked across from him, I knew that he was thinking the exact same thing that I was thinking. And his demeanor is so calm and cool. Just the way he leads that team on the field, you know that he's bringing it every Sunday. It's been a blessing to play with him. And never seen a dude throw a ball like he does, so... it's definitely, this is something I'll tell my kids about later.
Right, so guys on the team talk about you as a leader and a mentor. Let me ask you this. Is that leadership and that mentoring ability something that has always come naturally? Or do you work on that and do you try to learn from other leaders and mentors? What's your approach in that regard?
You know what, Jim? I'm myself, bro. I don't try to be a rah-rah guy. I'm not that guy. I'm a lead by example. I'm going to lead by the work, and the work is always working. You know, the road to success is always under construction. You know, like I just go out there and be me, man, and, you know, I try to lead, and, you know, when guys want to come along, I bring them along, man. I'm not a big, we're all grown men, you know, when it comes to this level, and there's no way that I'm going to, you know, make a grown man do something that he doesn't really want to do. And I think that approach, it's been that way since I was a kid. You know, I just want to be the very best at, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing that day. Living my life like I'm on a one-day contract, boss.
And you mentioned what it was like to grow up in Long Beach. And I referenced this, I think maybe you recall, but I married a lady who went to Pauley. So I know what that Pauley tradition is about. I know what the LBC is about. What was it like to grow up in Long Beach? And as you mentioned, your mother was so young and she was a single parent. What was it like for you to grow up in that community?
Well, as you know, growing up in the inner city, it's not, you know, the best circumstances. But what you do learn is you're either going to be a leader or you're going to be a follower, right? And the followers, you know, they normally show themselves as years progress. Fortunately and unfortunately, you know, my mom's brothers didn't really, you know, do what they're supposed to be doing as adults. I was able to watch and learn from what they did and not go that way. Sports was my outlet. I used to attend this after-school program called PAL, the Police Athletic League. I boxed in that league. I played basketball in that league. And then I caught the bus at 9 and 10 years old to Long Beach Poly to go to practice, in which my coach paid for $75 at the time. My mom couldn't even afford that. My coach really wanted me to play, so they would pay for me to play. It's experiences like that help make me who I am today, and you know, I'm just blessed.
Amazing.
Living in gratitude.
Amazing. Mercedes Lewis, my guest, is one of the leaders on that team. You were part of a video that the team put out calling for change in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. You specifically called for, quote, structural reform, not only from the community, but from law enforcement in a collaborative way, end quote. So what kind of conversations have you had with your teammates the last 5 weeks about systemic racism and racist police brutality?
I just think that, you know, obviously it's ongoing conversation. And as a whole, I mean, it doesn't stop here. It's always been situations where, you know, it'll be cool. The momentum is cool for like 2 months and then it stops. I just think that everybody needs to come together, leave the pride at the door, and really understand what's going on in this world. And I think you know, as sports figures and athletes, entertainers, we have the platform to be able to move the chain or move the needle, so to speak. And I just think we need to come together and continue to get the ball rolling downhill.
I see that point about moving the chain or moving the needle. What is your reaction then when you hear people say, hey, now, athletes should just stick to sports?
I laugh to myself.
Yep.
I laugh to myself. I think that, you know, we're all human beings at the end of the day. It's a shame that we're still dealing with the same problems that we've been dealing with for 400 years. I don't know, man. It's a lot of mixed emotions. You got to bring people along, man. It's always somebody, right? Is going to be feeling a certain way or have, you know, their certain feelings about what's going on that aren't favorable to yours. But we got to lead from the front, man. We got to lead from the front. And I feel like the athletes have a good chance, and we're in position to do that. So as long as we stay consistent, we'll start seeing some movement.
You're right. You're right, and I agree with you. You rebuilt your body going into last season. That was really interesting. Why was that so important, and what was the process like? What kind of workouts did you do to go through that to revamp your body the way you did?
Honestly, it's one of those things. Like, I think in 2017, I played at like 270, felt really good. Came in 2018, my first year in Green Bay, I was like 273, but didn't really play as much as I would like, right? So, and obviously we're not, it's freezing out there, so we're not running around and doing all of that. So I just felt like, you know, in order for me to be at my optimum and learning the climate, knowing your climate, I'm in Green Bay, I'm not sweating as much at practice. The food is amazing in that cafeteria. And so I just had to, you know, put myself on a little diet and, you know, came back in about I played a 268, 266 last year. I've been training mixed martial arts for 7 years. You know, I do my one-on-one basketball stuff still. I'm just always active, man. 2 times a day, grinding, swimming, doing my thing, man. So it's helped me a lot.
Mercedes Lewis joining me for a few more moments because it's been a minute. You can tell I'm not letting you go. I'm enjoying this a lot. When you do your MMA, dude, is it for your mind or for your body or both? More for your mind or more for your body?
So originally when I started in 2011, it was more for the cardio, right? And the way I got into it is at the Pro Bowl, I ran into Chuck Liddell. And Chuck Liddell's with Jay Glazer. Jay Glazer introduced me to Chuck Liddell. And then from there, you know, I went to my first class, and I just fell in love with it, man. I got addicted to it. And then it went from getting cardio to honing in on the skill and the craft. And I mean, now, you know, I'm at a place where right before the pandemic hit, I made a commitment to go get my belt in jiu-jitsu. So hopefully, you know, once this thing calmed down, you know, I can get back in there and do that. But it's something that I grew to love, and I'm addicted to it. I've been watching UFC since the beginning, so it's pretty cool.
It's really cool, actually. Listen, last thing. I mentioned off the top that you're one of the hosts of Uninterrupted's The Thread. It's a new series which explores the intersection of style, sports, and culture. First off, how did you first get involved, and what's it been like to work on that?
So I got involved. So one of my good friends and brand managers, his name is Brandon Williams. You know, we would just have these conversations about, you know, things that move the culture and how to maneuver to the tight spots in big cities all the time. That's what we talk about all the time. And obviously, you know, fashion is a part of it. And then, you know, it's two other of our good friends that we didn't meet together but met separately but found out that all of us were connected. And so literally for the last like 4 or 5 years, we've just been, you know, having these really good conversations, just talking shop about potentially having a show. And then, you know, one day we shot the pilot, started pitching, got a great response from a lot of different networks. LeBron and Uninterrupted were the ones that, you know, put the first contract down. And I think that's something that, you know, we really thought was really cool because it's right in our wheelhouse as far as, know, the athlete side of it and then the fashion side of it. I think it's going to be a good marriage.
All right, so lastly, how would you describe your approach to fashion and style?
My fashion is pretty chill. Simple is perfect. If I had to put it in a certain way, I'm the type that'll wear, you know, a blazer and some dope sweats and some cool sneakers. You know, I'm more of that type. I'm not really a label guy. My mom always used to say, you don't need to wear all that expensive stuff. You're a handsome guy, and it's going to speak for itself. So I'm pretty chill, and I'll dress it up a little bit, but I'm a chill cat for the most part.
Mom's knows. He's the co-host of Uninterrupted's The Thread. Packer tight end, Pro Bowler, 15 years in now. I mentioned an All-American and an All-Conference player at UCLA, an All-American at Long Beach Poly, Mercedes Lewis. Man, I appreciate you so much. I'm so glad we got caught up. Thanks so much for doing that, Mercedes.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thanks, bro.
Like, when you think about combining Red Bull energy drinks and metal music, what comes to mind? All right, let me actually throw that on its head. What is the last thing that comes to mind when you think about Red Bull and metal? Let me save you the trouble of reaching way back into your brain to pull this one out. The last thing anybody would ever think about when slamming Red Bull and metal together is golf. But thanks to an up-and-coming PGA superstar and a great first-time jungle guest, we can officially put those three things into the same sentence. 22-year-old Victor Hovland may not be a household name. Not yet he's not, but he will be. He will be. Believe that. Trust me on that. This kid's got some of the best new generation game on the pro circuit right now. Last February, he cashed it in for his first win on tour, less than a year after getting his card. So this is one of the ones to watch. And then this week, he's playing in his fourth straight event at the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit, and he's coming off a really impressive T11 at the Travelers. But this is less about how he's doing at the track and more about how he's getting to the track. Since the COVID comeback, the PGA Tour has offered use of private jets when a player wants to use them to get from tourney to tourney. I mean, who doesn't jump on that? What 22-year-old would not be the first in line to grab a seat on a PGA? Not Vic. You see, Vic's his own man and his own driver. According to an interview yesterday with golf.com, Vic Hovland's been getting around from Oklahoma to Fort Worth to South Carolina to Connecticut and now to the D all by car.
A car.
My man is straight road tripping in a car and putting in the miles. He said, quote, I just kept thinking, well, what if I just take my car to all these tournaments? I looked it up. It's 16 hours to Hilton Head. It's 13 hours to Connecticut and yada, yada. I just said, okay, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to do it. Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun so far. End quote. Gardner Minshew in the land yacht. Cannot believe Vic's act. One thing to travel around on no schedule at all in a giant RV, but completely another to chase around tour events that start on Tuesday and end on Sunday and are 13 to 16 hours apart. But that's what this guy's doing. The question is, how is he doing it? He told golf.com yesterday he's doing it with a combination of Red Bull and metal.
Red Bull gives you wings.
Red Bull. What, Surge didn't want any of that?
Surge. It's a fully loaded citrus soda with carbos. Beat the rush.
According to this article, Vic threw back 6 cans of Ready B when he drove from Texas to South Carolina overnight a few weeks back. He drove overnight to get there. Bryson DeRambo is out here slugging 6 protein shakes a day. Vic Hovland's on the road shotgunning 6 Ready Bs a day. And still somehow keeping that sled between the lines with metal music. Now, if you know anything at all about metal, then you know that no style of music has got more subgenres. So I gotta know. I know what this guy's drinking, but I need to know what this guy's bumping. Like, is he going doom metal with some electric wizard? Or is he going full stoner metal with sleep? I don't know. Is he like my guy, Rob Guthrie? Is he spinning the classic metal with some Sabbath? All right, now. That sounds great, doesn't it? Or I don't know, Vic, are you going psychedelic metal with some Earthless? I gotta know. Is it that? Is it any of that? Or is my man going sludge metal with High on Fire? How the hell is this guy doing this? What's he running on? Red Bull and what? Red Bull and metalcore with Zayo? It's got to be that, right? If it's not Zayo, is my man going grunge metal with the Melvins? What up, Vic? What's good, Vic? What is it? Or maybe he's going nu metal with the Deftones. These dudes are repping Sacktown. Or maybe he's just paying homage to his native Norway with some Norwegian metal from Dark Throne. Thing is, I've got no idea, but I want to have an idea. I want to know what's in that whip. What's he bumping? I know what he's drinking. What is he bumping? I mean, road trips are some of the best times ever, but road tripping with a PGA Tour pro yacked out on Red Bull and metal music, speeding through the country in the middle of the night to get to televised golf tournaments sounds like about the best time ever. And here's the kicker. This rock star routine of caffeine, metal, and midnight drives, it's working. It's good for him. Three events, three top 25 finishes. And this week, Victor Hovland became the first Norwegian male to break into the top 50 of the world golf rankings. My man, rock on. Rock on, Vic. Next stop after Detroit is Ohio. Get the ready bees on ice. Get the metal music on 12. Let's rage. Norma Jean style. Imagine Vic just tripping around in the middle of the night. 12-hour rides, all hopped up on Ready Bees and whatever metal is his choice. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is my guest. Marquez, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. In fact, let me rephrase that. How are you and everybody around you doing right now at this really unusual time?
Yeah, man, the family's all good. We're keeping everybody safe and, you know, trying to, you know, keep it as distant as possible, but, you know, still doing the things that we need to do on a day in and day out basis.
You know, I've asked this pretty much of every single guy who's come on the program, but I am curious, what has the offseason been like for you personally? How have you gone about approaching it to get ready for the year?
It's been a unique one, just trying to figure out different ways to work out and figure out, you know, different ways to, you know, get around people and still do football things and keep our distance from everybody else. So it's been an interesting one for sure.
No doubt. So a few weeks back, you tweeted something really powerful. You said, quote, "The difference is when you get pulled over, your first thought is, how can I get out of this ticket? My first thought is, am I going to make it home?" End quote.
Yeah.
That's an extremely heavy thing to read for all of us, I think. What's it like to live with that and experience that?
I mean, it's not an easy thing. And you kind of become numb to it as a African-American male or African-American person in general, because it's our norm. But when you take a step back and really realize what you're dealing with, it's kind of just sad, you know, just have to have real fear of, you know, am I going to make it home?
Marquez Valdez-Scantling is my guest. You know, I had your teammate Mercedes Lewis on the show earlier this hour. We talked about the response that you sometimes hear from fans when they say that athletes should just stick to sports. I asked him his thoughts on that. Let me get your reaction. When you hear that, what do you think?
I mean, we're people. You know, we're people. We're not just, you know, confined to what we do as a profession. Because if that was the case, you know, everyone would be confined to what they do as a profession. You know, I will never tell you to, you know, stick to radio hosting and you shouldn't have your own opinions, because that's just not what it is. You know, we're Americans, we're human, and we all should have our entitled to our own opinions, especially the world that we live in.
I love it, too. What's funny, well, it's not funny, but what's kind of brutal about that is you're exactly right. I mean, the same people who are saying that all do other things, and they have plenty of opinions, and they're not afraid to tell you what their opinions are, but they don't want your opinion, unless, of course, your opinion agrees with their opinion. So my opinion is I agree with yours. All right. So you're entering your third season in the league. Obviously, this offseason is different. But overall, how different does it feel for you coming into your third season now that you do have 2 years under your belt?
Well, yeah. I mean, this one's a big one for me. You know, everything was ascending for me last year. And then the injury kind of hindered me a little bit, you know, toward the middle of the season. And so just kind of just bouncing back, 'cause that was my first time really being injured and having to deal with an injury that lasted my whole, you know, season. So just battling through that, you know, was a new phase for me, for sure, because I had never missed time before. Even though I didn't miss any games, I never not felt like myself going into a game.
Right.
So, you know, that was just something that I had to, you know, deal with all year. And then I just took this whole offseason just getting my body back right and, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, how can I be a better player and how can I get back to, you know, what I was doing before I got hurt.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling is my guest. Now, before you enter the league, I think, as some people know, you did work out with Randy Moss. How did that come to be, and what did you learn from that time with him?
I have this quarterback coach that I've been around, you know, ever since I was like a junior or sophomore in high school. And, you know, every summer, every time I'm back home, you know, we get together. He brings out one of his guys or a couple of his guys. We go out and run routes and stuff. And his name is John Kaleo. He's, you know, really big down in the Tampa Bay area. And he introduced us through another guy named Yo Murphy, who has a training facility down here. And so he brought his quarterback. He brought Randy Moss, and we kind of just linked up there. And then we started doing some one-on-one stuff and kind of grew from there and just learning from him and, you know, the things that he did, especially with the similar physical attributes that we both have. It's good learning from a player who, you know, has a similar body type as you. And yep. Then, you know, obviously a Hall of Famer, you know, you can't ask for a better, you know, one-on-one coaching than that.
That's true, and there's so much more to it than what it appears. For instance, like, people have this perception of Moss as this freaky, amazing athlete, but Rydell Anthony, who was there for the workout, said, quote, "One thing that made Moss great was he really gives a bleep about his craft and about the game of football," end quote. So how much did you learn from him about the little details of being a receiver, and then how much did those little details make a difference on the field for you?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that, you know, Moss always taught was to be yourself, you know, going into – you know, your years in the NFL or even in college, you know, you got to where you are because of who you are, not because of what someone else did or what someone else, you know, copying someone else's game. You know, go out and be you. And that's kind of the biggest thing. Because, I mean, there's not many things that you can teach, you know, physical-wise at this point in your career, but there's a lot of mental learning, you know. So I think that's something that he really did a good job of, just teaching guys about the game of football, you know, not just trying to get us in shape or, you know, teach us how to do this or do that, because the game changes from when he was playing to now, you know. So he can't really go out and teach, you know, what's happening now because he's not playing in that same time frame. But, you know, the mental side is always going to be the same. So that's something that he really preached on and really harped on.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling of the Packers joining us. I also had your friends, the Griffin brothers, on the program. In fact, I have a number of times over the years. Your name always comes up in the conversations. Take me back. When did you first meet those two?
We were like 4 or 5 years old. I've known them my whole life. We went to pre-K together, played Little League football together, went to high school together, you know, ran track together, did everything together growing up. So, you know, those are lifelong friends. I was actually just with them a couple of days ago. We were out paintballing. You know, we do a lot of stuff together, workout together. You know, they grew up 5 minutes around from my house. So, you know, those are lifelong friends.
such good dudes. And I know you ran the 4x100 relay with them and Rodney Adams, but am I right in saying this? You were on the Silver Raiders youth teams back in the day. Did that team have Griffins, Rayshon Jenkins, Isaiah Wynn, and more? If so, how do you explain all that future NFL talent on that same team in that same area?
Like, this is the thing. Like, with our area, there's so many talented players, players who are better than all of us. But, you know, it's just so competitive, and everybody can't make it out. You know, we all had a different mindset that we can go out and be great and be successful. And we all took different paths to get there. But at the end of the day, you know, we always wanted to be, you know, legendary in our hometown. And there's so many great players that have come through, you know, St. Petersburg, Florida. You know, not even just football players, different basketball players, track runners, like musicians, anything you want down there. And I think it's just a credit to our city and what we can do and, you know, motivation to the younger generations that we can go out and do anything you set your mind to.
Now, this is really important to you, too. I know this for a fact, and it's tough, and not everybody makes it out. Caring for people without homes became an important cause for you to the point that you launched a donation drive when you were still in college. Like, you had dentist offices in California sending dental kits and floss. Players were donating duffel bags. The list goes on. What was it like to coordinate that drive and then distribute the bags, and you did so at a young age?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me, this thing kind of just started with me and my parents. We were leaving church one day, and my dad asked me, you know, like, what do you see yourself in the future? You know, like, obviously, you're a great athlete, and, you know, you graduated college, but, you know, what's your goal in life? You know, and mine was to help people. And so we kind of came up with this, you know, duffel bag drive, and we were just going to go out and give out a couple bags because, you know, as a college athlete, you don't have a lot of money. And it was just something like, you know what, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but I have a voice. And I kind of tweeted it out and, you know, made a couple Instagram posts, and it kind of just snowballed into, you know, this huge thing where people all over the, you know, the United States were coming in and bringing stuff and sending stuff. Like I said, the dental offices from California and, you know, all over Texas. I had so many people reaching out and donating things. And so it kind of just gotten bigger and bigger year by year. And I just want to keep it growing.
You know, to put that in perspective again, you held that first event when you were in college, and then you kept it going when you were a rookie in the NFL, when clearly you could say, this is something I'll get to at some point, and you didn't. You got right at it, and that's amazing. I give you so much credit for that, and I have so much respect for it. Before I let you go, let me ask you about the offense really quickly. What's it been like to play with Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, he's one of one. You know, there's no better quarterback to ever throw a football. You know, and even growing up, he was always my favorite quarterback, so you know, this is a dream come true for me. To be able to, you know, be on the same field as him, you know, being able to live out my dream with my favorite quarterback. And, you know, you can't ask for a better guy to, you know, to lead you and to teach you. MVP, Super Bowl winner, you know, whatever, Hall of Famer, whatever you want, he's done it. And he's always going to do it. And so just having that quarterback to, you know, show you the ropes and show you how to, you know, be a pro, you know, you can't ask for a better guy.
And one quick thing, legend has it that when you got the Packers playbook after you were drafted, you would redraw the playbook by hand. In fact, you did it three times in the first 3 months. What was that project like, and how much did that help?
I mean, it wasn't an easy task, but I think the first thing that, you know, Randall Cobb told me when I first got there was, like, the more you know, the more you can play. And, you know, that kind of just stuck with me, just being able to play, you know, all different positions, because, you know, as a rookie, you're trying to get in where you fit in. And it was one of those things where you got a bunch of guys battling for, you know, one position. But if you can play all three positions or all four positions, you become a lot more valuable. And I had Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb in front of me, you know, as two great pros. And then Geronimo, who had battle injury that year. So we had, you know, three great pros in there. So if I can get in there and be behind one of those guys right away, you know, because all three of those guys had went down at some point in time during that year. And so if I can play any one of those positions, you know, it's even better. And that's just what I kind of stuck with, and that's what kind of worked for me.
Brad, what's up?
Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Good, dude. How about you?
I'm okay. First off, I want to let you know I've forgiven you for what happened on June 19th. Letting that big-eared, soundbite-filled call with the audio gaffes and the same NBA jokes that the three guys who went before him used, letting that win was interesting, Jim. apparently the selection process with the XR4 Ti picking the winner is very similar to what we got going in America right now, where no one really wants to step forward and sound stupid by admitting they voted for that crap, but here we are. Anyway, I've forgiven you, Jim, but I haven't forgotten. Listen, I heard your rant on the NBA players in the bubble not being allowed to have sex and that porn company offering free VIP access. Wanted to call in with a sports take here. Listen, Jim, you're overlooking the real heroes. There needs to be a line of civilians outside that hotel clapping and cheering on these poor men and women who have to come in and clean those rooms every morning. Those people are going to need some personal protective equipment, Jim. Visors, goggles, a pair of those big metal barbecue tongs, and the ability to pick a towel up off the floor that's stiff as a board and act like nothing's happening. You want to talk about something operating at full capacity? That laundry facility is going to be running hand towels 24/7 from the time that thing starts until it's mercifully over when the Lakers win. Jim, we all know these guys are going to punch the clown out there, but what we don't really know is who's going to punch it the most. We need Stucknut to post the odds. And this is just a hunch, but I think the early favorite, I'm guessing, has to be J.J. Reddick. That guy...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Oh, hell no, you didn't. No, you did not just say that. No, you did not just do that. Let's quickly go to Wisconsin. Susie, you made it in. Susie, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you, Susie. What's going on?
Oh, I've been watching or listening to the show only about, I don't know, about a week and a half. Listened to the Smack Off. Changed my life. I am hooked on your show.
Love it.
The fact that I just really like the cut of your jib, and you don't pull punches, but you elevate the conversation. You're smart, and you're just funny as heck. So, love it. The reason I called, too, is I kind of threw out to the universe, I need a sign. I need a connection with my brother. He passed away about 5 months ago.
I'm sorry.
Love sports. The most sarcastic and smart guy I've ever known. And then your show came along, and now I feel like I still have a connection with him. And his birthday is this weekend, so shout out to him and to you for bringing that that connection back into my life. So
Susie,
really appreciate you.
Susie, I'm really sorry for your loss, and I'm so appreciative of that phone call. That is wonderful. That is a beautiful phone call, Susie. Thank you so much.
Good night,